Welcome. Thanks for joining us today on the Venture Podcast. We hope this message encourages you and inspires you along your journey.
I want to welcome you all to week 4 of the Breakthrough Life. And hopefully you are tracking, you've got your guide, you're doing the exercises. We made a commitment last week to identify 5 people that we would pray for, take 5 minutes a day and pray for those 5 people, so 25 minutes during the week. Hopefully you have done that. If you didn't, I'd encourage you to jump in with us and do this as we walk through this together. So important that we engage all of this together as we take these steps. And this week, we're talking about time. In fact, probably visible representation of time. I don't know what you think when you see a literal hourglass. My son saw it yesterday, and both of them individually, they said, please don't tell me you're going to preach for an hour. I said, no, but thank you. I'm glad your mind went there first. We gave the sand a little bit of a head start, so we should finish in time with it. But you look at an hourglass and the visible representation. I don't know where your mind goes when you see it. For some of you, it immediately goes to, as the sands go through the hourglass, so go the days of our life, which explains a lot about how you spent your afternoons, maybe growing up with it. You see in it, as each drop of sand goes, just tangibly, you can almost feel like the time slipping away. You think about how you measure your life. How do you grab a hold of time? Maybe you get the device, I was reading about it, it's called the ticker. Looks like a watch, it's T-I-K-K-E-R, you can buy one. And it was invented by a guy named Frederick Colting. He lives in Sweden. And they put in, when you buy it, you put in your information, it's got an algorithm, and it's based on an actuary table, tells you how much time you have left in your life. And so it looks like a watch, but instead of a watch, it's counting down. It will tell you how many years, how many months, how many minutes, and how many seconds. You just kind of like the Grim Reaper right there on your wrist. And the guy invented it, he said, I don't think it's morbid. He goes, in fact, I call it the happiness watch. So you can kind of track, you know, make sure that you're making the most of your life. I don't know, it feels morbid to me, especially when I read his background. You know what he did before he invented the watch? He was a grave digger. Yeah. So maybe a little fixation there. There's a reality as we've been talking about this breakthrough life. And when we say that, if you're brand new, what we're talking about is how do I live my life where it's not just focused on me, it's not even just focused on doing life as a church family. How do I think about the people that the gospel needs to break through into their life? How do I live in a way that I'm connecting with people, I'm building relationship, I'm using opportunities for God to use us to carry out what he said is the great commandment, great commission that he sent us out in the world to do. And the reality is it will always stay a great intention instead of a great commission if we don't wrestle with the subject of how we use our time. And I've told you every week, and I'll go back to it again, breakthrough always starts with love. It always starts with love. This whole message, the gospel starts with love, but not a love in feeling. It's actually a love in action. It's that agape love where I choose to love whether they deserve it or not. And so as you think about love, love always requires sacrifice. That kind of love always requires sacrifice. That's how God loved us. For God so loved the world that he sacrificed. He gave his son. Christ so loved us that he gave his life for us. So that whoever believes would not perish, but have everlasting life. Love always requires sacrifice. And a year ago, when we did the Breakthrough campaign, we were really asking ourselves and praying and seeking God, what is he calling us to sacrifice financially over and above our regular giving in order to be able to maximize this campus and maximize our ministry outward? And we went through the campaign. It was a very sobering time. It was a very spirit-filled time. I don't know about you as a family and praying as a couple, especially Lee and I, as we came down to that commitment weekend, and I still remember on the stage here filling it out. Now, we had prayed about it before that moment, and we told everybody in the church, just listen to God. What does he tell you And for all of us, I remember the number we came to, it felt like something like, oh, Lord, are you really asking us to commit that? And we both believed that and did it. We did it three times because we were in all three services. We didn't multiply it by three, by the way, though. And here we are a year later. And I'll just tell you, it's meant sacrifice. There wasn't in some magic thing that we committed it, and man, the next week a check showed up. It's meant a commitment of living that out. But God is using that so much in our walk, in our life, in our family. And it's not just us. It's about 650 individuals and families who made that commitment over and above. And you've been giving. You've been on that journey with us. And you recognize it takes sacrifice. But you know what we're talking about today? It may even be more sacrifice for people who live here in the valley. It's one thing to commit financially. It's another thing when you commit your time. Will I love enough to sacrifice my time? Am I willing to look at maybe the resource that we hold on to the most, the resource we feel such a deficit about? You know, you go to somebody financially with it and you go, hey, I'd want you to give. If they looked and said, hey, I am bankrupt. I don't even have the money to pay my bills, much less give anything. I think when we come to this topic of time here in the valley, a lot of people, based on lifestyle and all that we're doing, we feel bankrupt time-wise. And so at church, we go, hey, man, we're going to do this outreach. Hey, we're going to step with that. And there's a part that goes, I don't even have the time to do my responsibilities now. And I'm going to look at more. There's a level of sacrifice that comes with that. And before we move forward, it happened first service too. Anytime you start talking about time and money, everybody starts getting really tight. Can you do me a favor? Everybody, take a big deep breath. And I let it out. It's going to be okay. But because in all of this, God uses the things that are really dear to our heart to shape us the most. That's why when Jesus said, where your money goes, your heart goes with it, it's so formative in your spiritual life. And I would say the same with our time. Where we invest ourselves is what's going to shape our lives the most. So let's step back for a moment and just think about time, because I think we've got to understand how does the Bible even approach this subject of time. The first thing that you see in it is all time is from God, and so we're called to steward it well. Just like we taught with money, all your money, we look at it and we go, it's my money, and we realize it's really not my money, it's his money. He gave it to me. All of it's from God, so I want to be a good steward of what he gave me. Same is true of your time. Every breath that you take, every minute of your life, every year that you have on this planet, I promise it's a gift from God. And so in the same way, you want to look at it and go, how do I steward well what he's given me? And the reality is, just like money, we all don't have the same amount of time. Now, when I say that, you go, oh, wait a second, Tim, we all have 168 hours in a week. Yeah, but you start looking at different lives. You know, I always tell people it's great to travel overseas, go to another country, because you can kind of see some of the things we take for granted. I've been to Rwanda many times, and it always stands out to me there. I'll see it's usually women who are doing it, but hours of the day where they have these big containers, and they're carrying them, and on average, many of them have to walk 2 hours there, 2 hours back to go get clean water for their family, for the day. Can you imagine if 4 hours of your day now suddenly just got carved out getting water? Something I do in a moment's notice where I walk over to a faucet and I turn on and whew, it's there. I suddenly got 4 hours they don't have. We don't have the same amount of time. I look at it, some of you're working two jobs just to make it. Single parents, could we stop for a moment, just salute single parents? Could we recognize that? Yeah. Just working and then taking care of a household and then kids and all that is involved with that. Some of you have little kids right now. You're in a season where they're just little balls of energy who demand from you all the time. And you kind of look at it and you go, oh, this season and all. We don't share the same amount of time. Now I can go to the other end of the spectrum. Maybe you're empty nesting now. You suddenly look up and go, oh, we have more time than we had before. How are we stewarding? Maybe you're a single adult. That's one of the reasons Paul, when he taught, Paul said, he goes, man, I recommend not getting married. Now, he wasn't against marriage, but he just goes, it's amazing the time it frees me up to do the things that I really think that matter with it. Here's the good news for you. Jesus will never compare you to anyone else. So every one of us, one day you're going to stand in front of Jesus and he's going to ask, how did you steward what I gave you? And he's going to do it with your money. He's going to do it with the gifts that he gave you, the abilities in that. He's also going to do it with your time. What'd you do with what I gave you? And you know, we often talk about the parable of the five talent and the two talent, the one talent. He's going to look at somebody and go, man, you had five talents when it came to time. You had a lot of opportunity. You may have only had two talents. You may have only had one talent. He'll never look at you and go, man, why didn't you do what she did? You see how she served at the church and she taught that class and she was involved. And sometimes you live under that. You go, man, she's doing everything. He's never going to look at you and go, man, why didn't you do what he did in that? He never compares. That's the good news. Now, here's the flip side of it. He actually knows how much time you have. He's better at keeping up with it than even your Apple Watch that gives you that report, you know, of how much time you spent on things. He knows. And again, the question is, how did you use it for the things that matter most? Because it goes fast, guys. Psalm 36 says, show me, Lord, my life's end and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting my life is. You have made my days a mere handbreadth. The span of my years is as nothing before you. And you think about it before God, it's so short. Everyone is but a breath, even those who seem secure. Even those who think, I got it, all the time in the world. Even in life so far ahead, the writer of the Psalms is saying, it's just a breath. And I'll tell you this, the older you get, you realize how short that breath is. How am I stewarding what God gave me? Here's the second thing. You need to recognize there's two types of time. There's two types of time with that. When you recognize and you're measuring with that, it's relative in ways. In fact, Einstein was asked once in his theory of relativity, do you think time is relative? And he said, well, here's all I know. For a young man sitting next to a pretty girl, an hour seems short. Sitting on a hot stove, a minute seems long. So you tell me if it's relative. And there is that part of that perspective. And actually in scripture, you'll see there's two different Greek words for time. Two different Greek words. One is chronos. And you probably recognize chronology. And so it's the measure of the quantity of time, minutes, hours, days. It's when you're measuring it in those minutes with it. The other Greek word is kairos. Kairos, this is the quality of time. This is those moments of time. Sometimes it's a season with it. And so it's not so much reflective of, oh, I'm going to give you the exact minutes in it. It's those moments that count. It's making the most in it. And scripture tells us the importance of both, by the way. You can't go, oh, man, one or the other. There's a balance in it as you live life. Psalm 90 says, so teach us to number our days. This was written by Moses. He tells all of us, he says, God, would you teach us how to measure the chronos, the number of the days, that we might get a heart of wisdom? I realize I only have so many days on this planet, so I want to be wise with that. I got to understand the chronology, the calendaring of that, the length of time. Paul says, though, as well, look carefully then how you walk, how you live your life, not as unwise, but as wise. Now here he's using the word kairos, making the best use of the time. Making the best use of those moments, making best use of the decision in that because the days are evil. There's a balance of both and understanding both, and it's kind of easy just to equate time to just chronos, oh yeah, I've got that, without thinking about what was the moment to be gained in it. In fact, there was a professor years ago at the University of Pennsylvania, and he's making this point with it. He called a young man forward, and he asked him, how long have you lived? And the young man told him his age, and he said, no, that's how long your heart has beat. But how long have you lived? And the guy was confused. And the professor said, let me share it this way. He said, when I was 9 years old, I was in the fourth grade, we went to the Empire State Building. It's the tallest building in the world. I still remember it. Went up to the observation deck, and I stood there and I looked out. Listen how he describes that in his life. He said, in one mystical, magical moment, I took in the city. If I live a million years, that moment will still be part of my consciousness because I was fully alive when I lived it. He looked back at the young man and he said, so tell me, how long have you lived? The young man shook his head and he said, maybe an hour. Now that I think about it, maybe only a few minutes. You know, the researchers, Matthew Killingsworth and Daniel Gilbert, they said the average person spends almost 50% of their time thinking about something other than what they're doing when they're doing it. So in other words, we're half present half of the time, which some people would say is a half-lived life. See, the importance of it, of not just measuring minutes, but understanding and making the most of the moments, of how you do those two things well. How do we do that? And especially, how do we do this if we're going to live a breakthrough life, if we're going to make this a part of it? It's so critical. And so in our remaining time, I'm going to just give you three pretty simple principles about how do we make the most of our time. How do we live in this way? They're pretty simple to understand. I'm going to tell you, they are game-changing if you'll apply it. It's game-changing. Here's the first one. You got to be intentional. You got to be intentional. Having an intentionality about life, especially when it comes to your time, where you don't just let life happen to you and you wonder what happened. Again, it's easy to equate it to money. You ever talk to somebody and they kind of sit down and they go, I have no clue what happened to my money. Every month there's more month than money and I have no clue what's going on. And the first step is to sit down and go, okay, let's see what you did with what you had. Let's look at where, so there's some intentionality, a budget. That's all a budget is intentionality with your money. That you're looking at it in that way. In the same way with time, a lot of times we can look up and you go, man, I don't even know what happened to today. I don't know what happened to the last hour. I don't know what happened to the last month. I don't know what happened to the last year. And it's easy in that moment to kind of look at everything happening to us and that's going and I'm in this and all the different parts of it. And you can just kind of feel like, man, life is going so fast. I have no choice but to live this way. I'm reminded of a true story of a little basset hound named Tattoo. Tattoo's owner one day accidentally, didn't mean to, but got in the car and shut the car door, not realizing that Tattoo's end of the leash was caught in the car door. And Tattoo was in the leash. And the driver took off. Now, fortunately, there was a motorcycle cop named Terry Filbert, who was pretty close. He's watching it, but they got up to about 20 miles an hour. He thought something was being dragged behind him, and then he kind of pulled up with it, and he said, there was old Tattoo. He was going, man. And as Terry described it, he was picking them up and putting them down as fast as he could. And every so often, he'd take a tumble, but then he'd keep going. Terry stopped. Tattoo was fine. I know some of you are like, how was Tattoo? Tattoo was fine. Did not want to go on a walk for a long time. But a lot of us, we feel exactly like that. You just feel like life is going and I am picking them up and putting them down as fast as I can. And we keep blaming life or blaming the season or blaming this. Here's the difference between us and Tattoo. We're the ones often attaching ourselves to the fast-moving thing. Where we attach to this project, we attach to that. I'm signed up again and I'm doing again. And the reality is there's certain seasons in life where you have to. Let's be real. There's seasons with the project. There's seasons with kids. There's seasons. I get it. There are seasons of life. Here's what often happens for me, though. It goes from being a season to a lifestyle. Where you just feel like you're strapped to it all the time. You're picking them up, putting them down. And I promise you, it will stay that way without intentionality. Within the same way that you step back and you look at a budget, you have to step back and you go, I got to evaluate my time. And I have to choose to prioritize what matters most. I have to choose. What are the core things? I'm not going to attach to everything. What are the core things? And as I prioritize, and again, it's having enough intentionality that I'm ahead of it. I was listening to Bob Beal. Bob Beal's a consultant, works with business experts around the world. He's with a group of CEOs and businessmen. He looked at all of them. He said, hey, I want you to take this week off from work. We're going to go on vacation starting tomorrow. And everybody in the room laughed. I mean, if I told you the same thing, I said, this week, we're going to go on vacation. We're going tomorrow. You'd all look at me and you go, yeah, nice, Tim. Wish I could. Must be nice to be a pastor, work one day a week and, you know, do those kind of things with it. Whatever goes through your head with that. Here's what Beal said. He said, the only reason you can't do tomorrow is you didn't plan for it. Totally understandable. He said, if I'd gone back 2 months ago and said, hey, I want you to take this week and clear the decks, he said, you would have the ability to do it. He said, the reality is you have more control than you think. It's just, are you prioritizing and intentional about what matters most? And that's part of when we talk about breakthrough, as a church, as an elder board, as a leadership, what we're saying in that, what we've recognized, when we think of the three parts of the Christian life, what Christ called all of us to live, a core part of it is you have to prioritize your time with God, your devotional time with Him. And that's why we give out bookmarks with reading plans. That's why we're developing an app that I'm so excited about that'll roll out at the beginning of the year. Hopefully we're on track with it, but it's got ability to help us prioritize that time. Secondly, part of the Christian life, you prioritize time with your church family. That's why we need to come to worship every week. That's why you need to be in a life group. That's why we do Tuesday nights. That's why this campus is going every day of the week, because we prioritize that. What we just recognize as a leadership team, though, do we prioritize that third part of the Christian life of going on mission, of reaching people far from Jesus? Do we prioritize that in the same way, or do we always just hope it happens and we have good intentions about it, or we tell you to go do it, but we don't partner with you in it? See, it's not going to happen. It'll stay good intentions for a church or for an individual if we don't step back and advance in our life and go, man, this is worthy of my financial sacrifice, and this is worthy of my time. That's why we invest in Fall Festival. That's why on this campus this weekend we'll have thousands of people. But we don't want just thousands of people. We want you with those people. So that as you invest some of your chronos, a couple of hours of time, you might have a kairos moment with someone and have that conversation. But see, that takes intentionality. Now, I'll talk to some people. Sometimes it's usually guys over the years that are like, they're on the road all the time. They don't have much time. And I'll hear this every so often. They'll say, well, I don't have much quantity time at home. I don't have much chronos at home. But, you know, it's quality. It's quality. And I'm like, it usually doesn't work that way. I would just say, you'll never experience the moments if you won't prioritize the minutes. I've never seen a couple. You ever seen in a couple like, okay, we have no time this week, but man, we're going to have five magical minutes. We're going to have the moment. Yeah, it probably doesn't work that way. Or with your kids, you ever done this? Even when you carve out some time, you go, this is going to be a memory maker day. It's usually a memory maker for all the wrong reasons. a lot of times the moments have to emerge because you gave it the container of the minutes. Lee always tells me she loves when we can do 2 weeks of vacation back to back. She just says, it's just always better because she goes, you know, it takes you 2 days to decompress before you're any fun. And then at the end of the vacation, you start ramping up again. So we only get that slot in between. So man, if we could carve that out, and there's truth, I've gotten better over the years with it. But there's a reality of that. How do I, am I giving enough of the quantity so that it can reach those quality moments? And this is particularly true when it comes to reaching someone who doesn't know Jesus. Guys, we can't show up in the moment and want it to be momentary. You can't come alongside somebody and go, hey, man, I really want you to change your whole belief system, your whole worldview. I want you to have faith in somebody that you've never had faith before. I got a presentation. Why don't we do a prayer? Let's do it. Here's the moment. Because I only have a few minutes. We got to go, can you do that? Come on. You want to change your life right now? Doesn't work that way, does it? And so part of what we're saying is, how do I come alongside and I'm willing to give time to people and love them and walk with them and trust that God's working in it? See, it takes those minutes if we want to see those God moments. As we do that, I just say, second thing is you got to be focused. Now, this comes back to your responsibilities you do have. You got to be focused on the work that you have. For many people, it's not a time problem, it's an attention problem. And I say many people, it's almost all of us now. You know, we used to talk about, man, young people have been trained by these devices. Let's be real, we've all been trained by them. It's literally changing our brains, our ability to concentrate, our ability to stay on task with it. I tell my boys this. I've been telling them, hey, guys, everything I'm reading about it, Cal Newport and some of the others, the superpower of the next generation will be those who can focus, who can stay on task and do deep thought, deep work, because we've gotten so, all of us, a little ADD, and we get off task, and we bounce all around with that. And you go, Tim, why does that matter? Well, it matters. If I'm not diligent in the moment, I'm going to waste my minutes. Your work's not going to go away. Your responsibilities aren't going to go away. The things you have to do are still going to be there. Breakthrough life doesn't mean that, man, God's going to show up and give you extra hours you never had before. Any more than it did when we made a financial commitment, it meant sacrifice and continued. Same thing's going to happen with your time. And so while you work and when you have responsibilities, if we don't focus and work like Scripture calls us to, that's why Scripture says, no matter what your job, no matter what your responsibility, you're diligent, you're doing it as if the Lord's your boss. And you want to save that time because I don't have minutes to waste in it. You know, years ago, 1918, Charles Schwab was the president of Bethlehem Steel, the largest shipbuilder in the country, second largest manufacturer of steel. And Schwab was always looking for competitive advantage. He brought in a consultant named Ivy Lee. Ivy Lee was known as a time consultant. And he brought him in and he goes, hey, I want to improve throughout the whole company. And Ivy Lee said, okay, I want to meet tomorrow with your top executives. And won't take long. And Schwab said, all right, how much are you going to charge me? Ivy Lee said, I'll do this. It's free. If you just do what I tell you to do for 3 months, it's free, and then you pay me what you think it's worth. The next morning, Ivy Lee met with the executives, called them into a room. He said, here's what you're going to do. At the end of today, I want you to write down up to six, no more than six, of your top priorities, the things you need to do for the next day. Write it down at the end of the day. And prioritize them 1 to 6. Put the most important thing at the top of the list all the way down. Tomorrow morning when you come in, start work on number 1 and don't move off of it until it's done. And then go to number 2, do the same thing. Number 3, if you don't finish the list, carry over anything to the next day, reprioritize, and just do it again. Ivy Lee said, do this for 3 months, tell me how it goes. And he walked out. And all the executives looked at Schwab because they had planned, we're going to whole day with the consultant, we're going to work and all these different principles. This little simple formula, They did it for 3 months. Charles Schwab sent him a check in 1918 for $25,000 for 15 minutes of consulting. That's about $400,000 today. And he said it has been the most revolutionary thing, the productivity and what we do. Now, again, I just encourage you, take it for what it's worth. Now, my goal is not to be an efficiency expert or a time consultant, but here is my goal. I know you got jobs tomorrow. You got tasks tomorrow. You have things that you need to do. And the more diligent and the more focused you are, you will not waste minutes because you don't have minutes to waste. And I don't have minutes to waste because you know what happens when you waste? Wasted time robs from the people that matter most. The deception of the devil in that moment, oh, I can waste a minute here, I can waste a minute there. In that moment, you know who you're robbing from? You're robbing from the people that you want to go home and be with. You're robbing from the time to be able to invest in your kids. Robbing from the people that you want to serve. And I promise you this, and it happens in all of our life, the people that I'm trying to reach for Jesus, the ones that are out there that I've got to be intentional in my time with it, they are usually the first people that go because I got too busy, I didn't get accomplished, I've got so much going on. Oh, I'd love to reach those people, Tim. I just don't have the time. And so I just challenge you. One, we got to be intentional, but two, we got to be focused in what he's called us to do. The Bible calls us to be a diligent people to the task at hand so that we can be a missional people to the people that matter. Final principle I'd say to you is just be open. Be open. And this is that part where it's not just efficiency, it's not just planning. There's a spiritual endeavor that you're engaging in. And so we want to be open to what only God can do. And when I say that, I would say just allow God to interrupt your plans with divine appointments. See, the reason we want to plan well, the reason we want to focus well, the reason we want to work well is it creates enough margin, enough space in life so that when God actually answers our prayer request and that person of peace you've been praying for calls you and said, hey, can we get together? When God brings somebody across your path, when you have that opportunity, then there's an openness, I'm ready for that. And I'm willing to not look at it as an interruption, but actually an opportunity to engage. You know, just read through Christ's ministry. And if you look at Jesus, Jesus was very diligent. He only had 3 years of public ministry. And you think about what he needed to accomplish. He had 3 years to train this group of guys to now lead the church that's got to go for 2,000 more years. You wouldn't have blamed him if he just pulled them aside and said, we're just going to do 3 years of heavy-duty discipleship just with us. But he didn't operate that way. He had a mission where he had to go die on the cross. I wouldn't have blamed him for the whole time. He said, I'm going to spend the whole time with my Father alone, devotionally, preparing for that time on the cross. Wouldn't have blamed him for that. But what did he do? He spent that time in community with his disciples. He spent time with his Father. And he spent time intentionally on mission. And look how many times in his life it seems like he's just interrupted. And yet he turns those interruptions into interactions. He takes a time when he's resting by the well to have an interaction with the woman there. We looked at that passage in John 4. He's walking along. How many times is he walking along and a woman touches his cloak and he stops? He says, we're going to actually have an interaction here. There's some blind guys on the side of the road. They're screaming. You're talking about interruption. They're screaming so loud. They're like, Jesus, 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 Jesus. Everybody told them, would you just shut up? You're interrupting him. And Jesus goes, not an interruption. We're going to have an interaction. And he went over and healed him. He's in a house doing ministry, and some guys are so passionate about their friends, they tore a hole in the roof and lowered the guy down right in front of Jesus. You're talking about an interruption. Can you imagine if in the middle of the sermon I'm going and suddenly we look up and somebody's ripping a hole in the ceiling? I'd be tempted to go, hey, I'm doing something here. But Jesus goes, oh man, perfect timing. Has an interaction with that. See, Jesus had this remarkable ability that he didn't view it as an interruption. He allowed it to be a divine appointment. But I can promise you this, that will never happen in our life if we're hurried all the time. A hurried life rushes past the God moments. It just runs right past it. Because I don't have time to be interrupted, to interact, to follow up with it. That's why the first two points are so important. They may not have felt spiritual. They're so spiritual because they free us up to have an openness, not only in our calendar, but in our hearts for what God's doing. When Jesus was asked, they asked him, they said, how would you summarize the Christian life? And he said, oh, it's real simple. You love God and you love others. You love your neighbors. Remember what they asked him next? They're already looking for exceptions because they go, well, who actually is your neighbor? I mean, who do I have to, you know, give attention to? Because we're busy people. We're doing things. And so Jesus told them a story, told them one of the most famous stories in the Bible. He said, well, there was this guy, he was going up to Jerusalem, he's on the road from Jericho, it's, you know, dangerous road with it. He gets jumped by some guys, he's laying on the side of the road, he's in really bad shape. And first, a priest came along, a professional Christian. He came along and he kind of went to the other side of the road because I'm sure he had to get to the temple. He had really important things to do. Then a Levite came along. Again, another professional Christian. But he had to get to something. And I'm sure it was important. And then the Samaritan, the guy that everybody looked down on, he came by and he stopped. Said his heart was moved with compassion. He actually loved, not the sentiment of love. Oh, it stands out, these verses. The Samaritan went to him, bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. This is what jumps out at me. The next day. He had to totally divert what he was doing. He's there all night with him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper saying, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back. He sacrificially gave of his money, and he sacrificially gave of his time. Jesus said, that's what it looks like to love a neighbor. You know, years ago, I'd been studying this passage. It was a Sunday afternoon. I was headed to church, different church. And I was going to teach this class. I was kind of nervous about it, about a couple hundred people coming. It was this explore God type class. I'd teach for the first hour and the second hour just answer any questions people had. And you got questions all over. So you had to kind of be on your game. And this was the first week we were launching it. I'm focused. I'm headed to church. It was a beautiful afternoon. And I pull up in the car in front of me in the turn lane. It doesn't go through the whole light. So, you know, trying to keep a Jesus smile, I pull up and I see there's a guy in there and he's got his little daughter with him. I said, yeah, you okay? And he goes, oh yeah, we're fine. We're just out of gas. And I was like, okay, well, good luck. Went right through the light. That's about when the Holy Spirit said, really? Really? Good luck? And I started doing that arguing with God thing. You know, we're like, but God, I've got to get to church to serve you. And he immediately brought to mind, oh, I guess like the priest and the Levite, you just had to get on down the road there. And I'm like, Lord, I don't have time. And so I made one of these kind of deals with God. There's one gas station I would pass on the way to the church. And so I said, all right, I will pull into that gas station. If they have a gas can, I'll take some gas back. And I pulled in and went in. I said, hey, you guys have a gas can for a car ran out of gas? The guy goes, oh man, we sold the last one. We lost the one from the garage. And I got to be honest, I was relieved. I was like, oh, okay. You know, I'm going to the door. I tried Jesus, you know, I really. And right in that minute, there was a Subway restaurant connected to the gas station. And the girl behind the Subway counter, she speaks up. She goes, I could empty out the pickle jar. I was like, excuse me? She holds up this big, huge pickle jar. She says, only 2 pickles left in it. I'll pour them out. You can use this, fill it up with gas. And the whole time I'm like, no, Jesus, no, no. I wish you could see the guy's face. I go back. I was hoping he was gone by that. No, he's there. I said, hey, I got some gas. He said, oh, you got a gas can? I said, well, no. And I hold up the pickle jar full of gas. He's looking at me. And then we go over to put it in, and he goes, did you bring a funnel? It's like, that would have been a good thing to bring. So I got some cardboard, and I was able to make a funnel and held it while he poured it in. He got enough in, he started up, and jumps in. He goes, hey, thanks, and they're gone. I remember getting in the car, and I reeked of gasoline. And I'm driving to this class, and I'm like, really, God? Really? I don't think that impacted them at all. And in that moment, the Holy Spirit said it wasn't for them. It's for you. I mean, you can teach these stories and you can tell people to do that. But are you open to the people I've placed around you? Guys, for all of us, I can promise you this. This whole breakthrough life will stay a good intention for us as a church, but also for you individually. If we're not willing to wrestle with God about something that probably we hold as dear as anything else, our time. And he's never going to ask you or compare you to anybody else, but he is going to ask you what you do with what I gave you and the people I placed around you. This week, I'm going to ask you to take some time in your workbook. There's an exercise to just help you wrestle with your time. To account both the chronos, but also pray about the kairos. And I'm going to ask everyone to do that, to take that step, and to trust him with it. In fact, as we finish out, there's a song I've always loved because it forces me, every time we sing it, to wrestle with, do I really mean these words? Do I really want to give this to Jesus? I'm going to ask Shep to come out. And as we finish, I just want to go into a time. We're going to allow this song to be a prayer. You might want to bow while he sings. You may want to look up and maybe even sing with him. But let's make this more than a song. Let's make this our prayer.
We hope today's message encouraged you in your journey of faith. To keep up with the latest messages and what's happening, make sure to subscribe to this podcast and visit venture.cc.